Counsel, good morning to you. This is the case of Clausen versus LOL Investments LLC. And we will start with introductions from the court, and then we will recognize counsel. And then we will have you proceed. I am Mike Hedekin, the Chief Justice, and now by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
Good morning. William Castle.
I'm Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning. Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik. Good morning. And John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Mr. Barber, are you with us today?
Can you hear me?
Very good. Do you have your camera? Can you turn that on for us? Video?
Are we there?
Very good. We can now see you.
And I can see Paul.
Can you see and hear us?
Some of you, but I'm fine.
Very good. And Mr. Dodson, are you here today? I'm sorry, Mr. I am not reading my sign-in sheet here correctly. Mr. Botlinger, are you here today?
Botlinger is here, Your Honor.
Very good. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Botlinger, do you have any questions?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Barber, then. Again, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Terry Barber, and I do represent Steve Clausen, who is a farmer from down in Furnas County. This dispute started about a little over a year ago, and in August of last year, Judge Doyle, District Judge for Furnas County, entered an order in which he determined a quiet title action. In essence, he determined the quiet title. He also disposed of all of any sort of factual or legal issues that Mr. Clausen had raised in the proceeding. Subsequent to that order, we filed a notice of appeal. And I believe that the transcript will reflect that in that notice of appeal, we specified that we believe that the appeal was appropriate because it arose out of an order that affected a substantial right, and it was made in a special proceeding. When the case was docketed with the Court of Appeals, as the court knows, the Court of Appeals dismissed the appeal as premature, indicating that all of the issues hadn't been resolved and therefore it could go back to the district court to be wrapped up. I filed a petition for further review that gets us to today. I don't know that I necessarily want to plow ground unnecessarily, but we do submit to the court that we believe the order in August of 2020 was made in a special proceeding. We suggest that a quiet title action is sufficiently nuanced to fall into the category of special proceeding in the same fashion that a forcible entry action would, a condemnation, a partition action, and it involves title. And because of the breadth of the order that was made by Judge Doyle in August, we also believe that it clearly affects the substantial right of Mr. Clayson in a substantial manner. And as such,
I beg your pardon. Is this correct that the counterclaims with respect to ejectment, unjust enrichment, and attorney fees have not yet been decided? Is that correct?
That is correct, Judge. I don't know that there is a separate cause of action. I think the fourth cause of action in the amended counterclaim was an action that was specified as a cause of action for attorney's fees under 25824. I don't think that's what 25824 authorizes, is a separate cause of action. It's just not formulated in that fashion.
I see, but nevertheless, ejectment is a cause of action, and the counterclaim pleads unjust enrichment, which we might interpret as an accounting.
Yes, that's correct, and those were not specifically decided. The order that was entered in August was an order on a motion for partial summary judgment, and Mr. Bottlinger's client did not ask for summary judgment on those causes of action. But we believe that the breadth of the order that Judge Doyle entered essentially gutted any issues that Mr. Clayson could raise with respect to those causes of action. And I realize the court's holding in TDP phase one and yard at the rail or rail at the yard, whatever that case, whatever the name of that operation was, kicks this a little bit into the bailiwick of 25-1315, I believe it is, which is the statute that has to do with cases involving multiple parties, multiple claims, and so forth. And I think that one of the things that distinguishes this case is the fact that the breadth of the order essentially precluded Clayson from any defense on those other causes of action. But that's the basis, and I think that's the issue that we're here on this morning is whether we've got an order that was made in a special proceeding, whether the quiet title action is, and we believe it is, and whether it was an order that affected a substantial right of the party that is appealing, Mr. Clayson, and we believe that it did affect a substantial right because it pertained to title. And affected it in a substantial manner because it essentially resolved anything that Clayson could use to defend the action.
Are you familiar with our line of cases in which we have had somewhat similar pleading circumstances where quiet title and ejectment may have been decided, but the lost profits / accounting issue remained, and we found that to be not appealable?
I am not familiar with that line of cases, Judge. No.
Thank you.
Is there a way in which, Mr. Barber, your client would be prejudiced or harmed if you can't appeal this until after the ejectment cause of action is decided?
The question, as I understand it, is whether there is any reason that the remedy that we seek by appeal can't be adequately addressed and resolved when all of the other dangling participles of the case have been decided. And I think that what I would say in response is I don't know that there is any particular prejudice that I haven't specified in the petition, but I don't know that the criteria under 25-1902-1 sub B requires that the matter be something that cannot be, that could not be vindicated on a later appeal. So unless there's further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bottlinger, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Producers Livestock Credit Corporation respectfully contends that the Court of Appeals got this 100% right. This is not a final order. It is not appealable at this time. And the Court of Appeals lacked jurisdiction. It cited 25-1315 appropriately. 25-1315 is also the subject of Your Honor's recent decision in that TDP phase one case that Mr. Barber acknowledged that I'd like to talk about as well at some point here. But it is some background I think is helpful on this. And I won't go over all the facts of the underlying case because we're not here about that today. But this dispute wasn't really just over the last year. Mr. Clazen and my client have been litigating in one form or another since roughly 2016. Mr. Clazen was a former borrower of my client. He welched on his loans. He owes him well over $1 million. And my client had a junior deed of trust in the real estate that is the subject of this action. And back in October 2019, the senior deed of trust holder, LOL Investments, conducted a trustee sale, at which time my client bought this land to protect its junior lien interest. It was really the only way we viewed, or one of the only, primarily only ways my client might be made partially paid back for what it was owed. We timely gave a 3-day notice. We filed a case in county court seeking for a restitution of the premises under the forcible entry and detainer actions. And we filed a motion for summary judgment on that case. And 4 days before the motion for summary judgment was set to be heard, Mr. Barber filed the present action in district court, raising the specter of a title dispute for the sole purpose of divesting the county court of jurisdiction to hear the forcible entry and detainer action and delay my client's lawful possession of the property and allow Mr. Clazen to remain in unlawful possession of the property. Thereafter, he filed that district court case on December 16th, then he did nothing with it. Mr. Clazen didn't even serve it, didn't serve a single party. PLCC, my client, took the initiative, and in May 2020, we answered and we filed a counterclaim, and we also filed a motion for partial summary judgment that was eventually heard in June. The fourth cause
may
of action.
I beg your pardon. May I interrupt your history of the proceedings?
Of course.
With respect to potential harm on for the appellant, could be that we would take this opportunity, perhaps not, to say that when the title, quiet title ruling was issued, regardless of the pendency of the ejectment and the unjust enrichment, that it was appealable, and therefore he's covering his bases by coming here.
Well, and I think his base is covered by the Court of Appeals telling him, no, it's not appealable right now. You preserved your error in case that it was appealable. You did what you needed to do. But the Court of Appeals correctly dismissed it. Now you can appeal when the rest of the issues are resolved down the road, which respectfully, I think is the appropriate remedy here. Justice Papik,
I beg your pardon. Can I ask you the same question then? Are you familiar with the line of cases where quiet title, perhaps another item, is decided, but there do remain accounting issues where we have held not appealable yet?
You know, I'm going to embarrassingly but truthfully respond that I am not. I wish that I was. We scoured the jurisprudence of the state looking for examples like that. And we obviously need to improve on our legal research because we did not identify those cases. We would have cited them and relied upon them very heavily. And it makes sense that there would be a line of cases like that. I expected to find some and just didn't. And
well,
I'm embarrassed.
They may have existed before 1315 came into existence.
That, I'll take whatever excuse I can get. I think I should know those here today, and I don't have them in front of me. But the holdings there would appear to be very consistent. It makes sense when all these factual issues are all intertwined, let's appeal them all at once. At the time that Mr. Barber filed the notice of appeal on the quiet title action, Producers Livestock Credit Corporation had a pending motion to amend its complaint to assert an additional cause of action for forcible entry and detainer. The court subsequently determined that it had jurisdiction to allow that amendment because the FED action was in the nature of an execution on the earlier judgment, and the court subsequently rendered an order restoring possession of the property to producers. And Mr. Barber has appealed that also. So now there are two appeals already of this case. The ejectment action, though maybe merged kind of with the forcible entry and detainer portion of the case, remains pending, as does the unjust enrichment claim, as does the request by my client, Producers Livestock, for an award of its attorney's fees. Other defendant in the case, LOL Investments, also has a pending motion for its attorney's fees. We both assert that the underlying quiet title actions are wholly without merit and that they are patently frivolous. There is no basis in fact or law for any of the claims that were brought in that quiet title action by Mr. Clayson. Zero. And we'll happily address the merits of that when the time comes, when this appeal is in fact provident.
How would you distinguish this procedural history from Guardian Tax or the line of cases in partition where we have found that the quiet title ruling is appealable?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I honestly think that analogizing this to a partition action is probably Mr. Clayson's best argument, I think. So we put some energy into thinking about that, and in particular as to partition actions, they are completely different. There's a different remedy. The remedy in a partition action is sale or division of the real estate. The remedy in a forcible entry and detainer action is merely possession. The procedures are very different. The policy behind forcible entry and detainer is designed to give lawful possessors a streamlined approach to getting their possession back, getting back the property that they should have possession of. And the partition procedures are not that way. Additionally, there are provisions for extrajudicial handling of very important determinations by the appointment of referees in a partition action that is not present in a forcible entry and detainer action.
There's something about partition cases that you can't unscramble if you don't get an accurate ruling. Also, there's a statutory difference compared to ejectment and so forth.
I agree completely. Yeah, I had thought kind of apples and oranges, but it's more like apples and broccoli. I mean, they are just they are a completely different remedy and procedural course. And recently, Your Honors, in the TDP phase one case, specifically expressly ruled that absent the certification under 1315, that the order on forcible entry was appealable. It's not appealable. I don't know what Mr. Barber and Mr. Clazen's justification is for filing their subsequent appeal purely on an FED finding, but to my read, TDP phase one would say, unless there is that specific certification by the trial court, a ruling on a forcible entry and detainer action is not appealable if there are remaining issues, such as the amount of money owed to the lawful possessor, which was the same kind of a claim that was brought in TDP phase one. I think it would work a strange result to have to allow the FED itself to bar the FED from being appealable, but an intermediate step on the road to the FED being appealable. And it would eviscerate the function of FED because everyone would just assert quiet title, appeal it, and tie it all up for months or years in the appellate process. So that wouldn't be a good outcome. And that would prejudice all lawful possessors in the state. I think I'm out of time. I think I'm actually over time.
I think you are, Mr. Bottlinger. So thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? Two minutes and 3 seconds for rebuttal. Mr. Barber.
Thank you. Just a couple of things briefly. I think, first of all, the conversation has kind of drifted, and now we're in the realm of forcible entry and so forth. And I'd like to go back. I think that perhaps some part of the line of cases that Judge Miller-Lehrman was referring to are the Evans case and the Peterson case, both of which are referred to in our petition for further review, in which the court granted for the enactment of 1315, and certainly long before the amendment to 1902, specifically found that when the issue of title is decided in a case, title alone, it is a final judgment for the purposes of appeal. And I think that has application in this case in the context of this being a special proceeding. All special proceedings are going to have distinctions. I certainly don't disagree with that proposition. Forcible entry is different than quo warranto, is different than forcible entry or ejectment or mandamus. They all have their own nuances, but they are nuanced, and I think that is what characterizes something as a special proceeding or not where you find it in the statutes.
Or Mr. Barber,
yes,
in the Peterson case, in the partition context, there's a specific statute that determines that the determination of title is a judgment. That's the language of the statute. There's no such thing in the quiet title context, is there?
I don't believe so, no, Judge.
I mean, quiet title is a form of civil action that's contemplated by Article 21 of Chapter 25, right? It's not a special proceeding.
Well, we're submitting that we believe it is, Judge, because of the special special requirements that the statute imposes on such a proceeding. That's what we believe is part and parcel of the special proceeding determination.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments in Clayson versus LOL Investments LLC. Council, thank you for participating today by WebEx. You are now excused, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Darling Ingredients versus City of Bellevue and consolidated for argument with Krejci versus City of Bellevue.